It's the Red Tag Sales Event at Jeff Weiler Chevrolet of Columbus. Look for the red tags and unlock unbeatable discounts on new and pre-owned Chevys. 0% APR on select new Chevrolet for well-qualified buyers. From the rugged Silverado to the sleek Malibu, every tag means savings. Financing made easy. We'll pay off your trade no matter what you owe. Stop by Jeff Weiler Chevrolet on Gender Road or shop anytime at jeffweilercolumbus.com. That's jeffweilercolumbus.com.
This holiday, deck their countertops with peppermint white chocolate mochas, gingerbread lattes, and pumpkin cream cold brews. Ninja Luxe Cafe is the ultimate gift. It's the number one best-selling espresso machine in the U.S., perfect for the coffee lovers in your life. If they can dream it, they can brew it. No skills needed. Espresso balanced. Drip coffee rich. Cold brew in a flash. Hands-free silky microfoam. Dairy or plant-based milks. Bring joy into their holiday and every day after with Ninja Luxe Cafe. Shop now.
Let's freaking go. Brian Kelly is actually not in hit live. They hit live. Why? No. There we go. It says it's my thing doesn't say live. All right. It should be on now. I think it actually started a little early. I was going to come in hot with the Rihanna lyric. And I'm going to go ahead and do it now. Brian Kelly is saying, "Bitch, better have my money." We are in a conundrum. And I understand that as LSU football fans and as Power Hour LSU fans, you're not here to hear me talk about lawyer mumbo jumbo. I think for a lot of us, before we get into the minutiae of what we are going to discuss involving this Brian Kelly situation, we just want this to move on. And we get to our next coach. And we get to the Arkansas game at 11:45 a.m. Central Time, which, by the way, I will be at this weekend in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. If everything goes according to plan, I cannot miss the battle for the Golden Boot, my favorite rivalry in college football. But it is going to be hard for LSU to get out of the full $54 million. So the TLDR of this whole thing, does LSU get out of paying what looks to be a $54 million buyout? And can they reduce this down? And obviously, from an LSU perspective, we want this reduced so we can have more money, in theory, to do other things. You know, that extra $20 million could theoretically go to the college football program that is our dear Fighting Tigers of the LSU world. I did not say that smoothly at all. So let's start off with the first thing here. LSU feels that they can get Brian Kelly for cause. Now, I'm going to actually show the tweets here from a guy that actually knows what he's talking about when it comes to college football buyouts. And it's a lawyer by the name of Tom Mars. I think some of you have seen some of his tweets already today. He says LSU is cooked. Louisiana law may be unique, but it doesn't recognize LSU's stupidity and make it a $54 million deal with Brian Kelly as a legal justification to stiff him. Okay. So let's go back to a few more of Tom's tweets regarding this Mars law, okay? He also says, no school has ever won a termination for cause lawsuit, even when they could allege grounds with a straight face. Thus, it seems unlikely that LSU could set a new precedent when everyone in college sports is laughing at them for taking a position that's absolutely absurd. We continue. My take on the likelihood of LSU getting Brian Kelly's buyout reduced with this bizarre strategy. Worse yet, by allowing its for cause position to become public, LSU has given Kelly the perfect excuse to say why he can't get a job anywhere else, eliminating any offset for LSU. So basically what Tom is saying here is that, and I'll make it bigger for you, pause. You look at LSU's situation. And part of the contract was when he got fired, for him to get the full buyout, he needs to pursue another job opportunity, whether it be in media or another coaching opportunity. This isn't the first time that this language is included in a college football coach's contract if he or she were to get fired. But it's one of those things that's so hard to enforce, right? Because all you have to do if you're Brian Kelly is say, hey, I talked to my buddy at Ohio State. The job's not open. Ryan Day is there. So, you know, it's a tough spot for Brian Kelly or LSU to be in. Brian Kelly's law firms versus the Louisiana AG might be the best college sports entertainment since Chad Powers. Kelly's lawsuit was filed by one of the best law firms in New Orleans and the powerhouse law firm of Skadden Arps, which has 1,800 lawyers in its 21 offices. Okay? So basically, the foremost expert when it comes to college football contracts, buyouts, and all that mumbo jumbo that none of us like to talk about is saying, hey, LSU, they're not in a good spot right now. Okay? Here's the thing I don't like about this. And obviously, every single college football program has its off-the-field hurdles. But why is it at our program that we always have something? We always have something. There's always something involving lawyers. It doesn't matter which coach. It doesn't matter which era. It's a mess. And I'm sick of it. I'm so sick of it. And with this firing in particular, this to me seems like it's going to be the messiest. And we all thought when Ed Orgeron got fired that all of this was behind us because we were bringing in Brian Kelly. He's a professional. He talks well. He's a guy that's organized and all this mumbo jumbo BS. So how should you feel about this? Because there are people smarter than me that have worked in law that are going to break this down way better than I did. Heck, my StreamYard obviously buffered and I looked very stupid at the beginning of the stream. But you should feel some type of way that Brian Kelly's going to get this full $54 million. It's not your fault. Him getting the full 54, like we said at the beginning, theoretically could help LSU. But in order to fire someone, you need to make sure that you have the money in hand, which is why, of course, Jeff Landry kept saying over and over and over again that I don't want the taxpayers paying for this. Taxpayers have never paid for this. They have never, ever paid for a coach's buyout. And it's probably not going to happen here. For LSU to fire him, you probably need to make sure you have the money on hand to take care of business when it's time for him to go. My understanding is LSU does have all their ducks in a row when it comes to firing him. They just want to see if they can skirt out of it. And now they're coming up with this, hey, Scott Woodward didn't have enough power. He never actually was fired. Okay, if that's the case, tell Brian Kelly to get his ass back in the office and coach his weekend versus Arkansas. Okay? So, look, it's so important. I despise Brian Kelly after today. And it has nothing to do with this lawsuit because I do think he deserves his full $54 million. I do. Whatever for cause reason you can come up with, sure, go find it. I do despise Brian Kelly, though, because this is the second time that he has wasted a roster that should no less be in the college football playoff discussion. We showed this chart a few weeks ago. I won't show it again because YouTube tells me, hey, when you show the fancy-smancy analytical charts, people don't really care. So if we get to it, I'm going to show it to you a little bit later. There is a stat out there that says if you have X amount of players in the Senior Bowl 1000, or it's actually the Shrine Bowl 1000. Let me make sure I get that correct, because those two bowls are competitors. They hate each other. It's Coke and Pepsi, right? The Shrine Bowl 1000 is the 1000 best college football upperclassmen that they are scouting to come be a part of their all-star game for the NFL draft. Now, obviously, they don't take 1,000 guys, but it's just like a 1,000-player watch list. And LSU is the only school that had 15 or more Senior Bowl, Shrine Bowl, 1,000 players that is not in the college football playoff this season. In fact, we are the only one not only not in the college football playoff, we're the only one not even in the discussion. Think about that. It's Oregon. It's A&M. Ohio State's up there as well. We suck compared to expectations more than any other school. And another thing that should piss you off, and it might piss you off as much as the 2023 underachievement. A lot of you remember we had Jaden Daniels, Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas Jr., Mason Taylor, Will Campbell, Embry Jones, all of which were drafted, and that's just on the offensive side of the football. You still had Mason Smith. You still had Harold Perkins. You had other good players. And you still weren't able to make the college football playoff with the disastrous defense with Matt House as your defensive coordinator. A lot of you know the spiel. But what's different is that that was a 14 college football playoff. That's a hard college football playoff to make. This year's college football playoff, I am projecting. Now, once again, I am not a Kelly Ford Ratings BCS computer wizard. But my own projections, just how I see the overall college football playoff picture, we will have a fresh set of ratings here in about an hour or so. Guess what? Guess what? Guess what? I think 5 SEC teams are getting in this year. 5! 5 college football playoff teams from the SEC, I think, are getting in. And I think that's going to be the case for a few reasons. An overcorrection for what happened last year with a lot of behind-the-scenes push for more SEC teams to get in. And also because the Big 12 stinks outside of Texas Tech. You have the ACC. That conference is atrocious right now. I feel like that should be a one-bid conference compared to last year when it was more than one bid. It was a 3-bid conference, if I'm not mistaken, or 2 with Clemson and SMU. But whatever the case may be, you, the viewer, should be more angry because there's going to be schools like Vanderbilt making the college football playoff. Vanderbilt over you. Ole Miss is going to make it. How does that make you feel? That the softest college football postseason national championship field, which is this year, a 12-team playoff with more than a third of the league potentially making it, because I do think 6 can make it. You had the most Shrine Bowl 1,000 players outside A&M, I believe. And you don't make it. You're not even close. You're not even close. So, yeah, I'm pissed off at Brian Kelly. I'm pissed off because there's so many kids on this team that deserved a chance to make the college football playoff. As angry as you should be about Jaden Daniels and that team not winning a national championship, it's really hard to make the playoff when there's only 4 teams. It's really, really, really hard. Should we have made it? Yeah. Should we have won the Natty? Sure. But a 12-team playoff? And here's what should piss you off even more. We weren't going to be close to a 16-team college football playoff. The rate that we're going, we wouldn't make a college football playoff March Madness. Where 78 teams get in. That should piss you off more than anything. So TLDR, if you're just joining us, we just had an influx of viewers. Here's the truth. Brian Kelly's probably going to get the full $54 million. Could he say, hey, just give me 45 or 40 and LSU pays it and then we just move on? Sure. Okay. Now, What's next for LSU? Well, I don't want us caught up in this for so long because it's more negative publicity. I want a more pristine image for my university for a potential coach to say, look, I want in. I want to be a part of the LSU brand. But here's one thing that I do really want to bring to the forefront is that in order to win in the college football playoff, you've got to have the players. You do. We spent so much money on this roster, and we still have a multitude of bad football players playing a high volume of snaps. So we have a huge individual player evaluation problem. We have a huge play caller problem. There are a lot of things that we have got to fix. But the truth is, when you look at this roster and you look at the players that we feel have played at or exceeded expectations, most of them are guys that are in their first season. All right, at this point, knowing the offensive environment, Harlan Berry is exceeding expectations. I did not expect him to be more productive at this point in the season than Caden Durham. And I'm still high on Caden Durham for the near future. But Harlan Berry is exceeding expectations. DJ Pickett, probably about the same. And then obviously the transfers. Jack Pyburn's been about what we expected. Mansoor Delane has been a superstar. He has exceeded our expectations. We thought he would be really good. Did we really think he would be the clear-cut best corner in college football? He's exceeded expectations. It's not like out of the realm preseason that we thought that. AJ Halsey has definitely exceeded expectations. I definitely did not think he would be the best safety in the SEC, and that's debatable. Michael Taft's a good player at Texas. There's quite a few that you could point to. A&M's got some good ones as well. 25, who made every play in the book this past weekend versus Missouri, definitely deserves some consideration. But, you know, I am of the belief that we should no less have been in the conversation of the college football playoff, but we're out of it. We're out of it, okay? Oh, man. Cliff, do you want me to block you? I was just getting ready to hit you up to say, hey, can I crash at your place this weekend? Because I will be at the Battle of the Golden Boot this weekend. I'm excited. Pumped up. Okay? Mansoor Delane certainly exceeded. It's out of Tony. It was out of Mont Dog. I don't want this to just be a me ranting live stream. It's out of Rob. Good to see everyone. CEO D. Granger says LSU fans better get ready for a Frank Wilson level coach because the top guys aren't coming in next season. I wouldn't be mad at a Frank Wilson level coach. Notice you said a Frank Wilson level coach, as in a guy who's unproven. I'm fine with getting somebody that's unproven. You know, I do want to address this, so I was going to do it a little bit later, but since you brought up Frank's name, I'll bring it up here. He did not manage a game well versus Alabama. He just did not. It's the same things, and it might not be a Frank issue. It could just be, hey, I'm probably thinking too much into upheaving a lot of the issues that we had with Brian Kelly's game management. I had the good fortune of going on KTBS Channel 3 in Shreveport. I don't know when they aired the segment or anything like that. Big thanks to Daniel, Alex, and them. I'm not a local TV guy. I was full gray hair basically at 21. And, you know, they look good. I don't look good. Now, they have makeup people. I don't have makeup people. I need a lot of it. But, you know, they asked me about the Frank Wilson situation. I believe they did. I don't know. The segment went by in a breeze. And truth be told, it's hard for an interim to come in and just fix all the mistakes from the previous head coach. And the things that really pissed me off about BK the most are the things that he has 1,000% control over, which is timeout management, game management type of mistakes. You know, I've always said that Brian Kelly, when it comes to fourth down decision making and analytical fourth down models and stuff like that, he actually is relatively forward thinking for a coach in his 60s, but he would never fix some of the things that just make common sense. So if we are losing, and it's not as important because, you know, we're playing Arkansas and Oklahoma to close the season and the season's basically over, but if we are losing, we want to go fast. We want to push the pace. We don't have time to lollygag, sit around, and try and figure out what the next play is, or what the next formation is, and what the next personnel grouping is. You just got to go. And to this day, the wide receiver rotations made no sense. And in many ways, we really struggled. Really struggled getting into what I feel is a hurry-up situation where we're just running play after play after play. But goodness gracious, with us basically down two possessions, we were tick, 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 ticking down the play clock to about 10 seconds left on the play clock for almost every single play when we are losing. You cannot do that. You simply cannot do that. You as a head coach just simply need to tell the offense, we're going to be in hurry-up mode. Not everybody's going to get a snap. Not everybody's going to play. And what happens is tendencies can arise. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, if you go back to the offensive film study from last night, I kept saying, hey, don't rotate in a receiver that you have never targeted. Because if I, as a defense, know that you have not thrown the football to this player, the likelihood of me respecting that player is very low. What do the best play callers do? Well, it's ironic that Cortez Hankton interviewed for the offensive coordinator job for the Los Angeles Rams. The team that does the best at personnel groupings, showing things over and over and over again, while doing slightly different things out of those same formations and plays, are Sean McVay and the Los Angeles Rams. And in the Rams' defense, they do play a lot of heavier sets. They play 13 personnel. They do a lot of this. But they do a really good job of, if things are good in 11 personnel, we're staying in 11 personnel. Guess what they've done this year? They have run the most 13 personnel in the NFL. They have arguably the best two receivers, receiver one and receiver two in the NFL right now. Puka Nacua and Davante Adams. I still think Chase and Higgins are better, but in the NFC, those two are the best. And what does Sean McVay do? Well, I'm going to run the most 13 personnel sets in the NFL, which means one of those guys isn't going to be on the field. We're going to put three tight ends out there. And guess what? They stay in that formation. 40% of the time, they have been in 13 personnel. It's crazy. Crazy to think about. But he's not worried about rotating in every single Tom, Dick, and Harry to give them a snap. That's what we're doing. It's a big problem. It's a big, big, big problem. So, yes, there are some coaching things that Frank Wilson needs to clean up. And I know a lot of you probably don't care because you're just kind of over the season. But I'll tell you who cares. The two players I spoke to today, as far as how hard they want to go these final few weeks that are in the final years, or one of them's in the final year of their eligibility and another is has 2 years left. They're ready to go. They're ready to go. And once again, I'm not source guy, but you know, you talk to some people from time to time. Okay. Let's go to Benny. Carter, I have an extra paper bag for you for the next 10 years, brother. Just let me know where to send it. We're not paper bag level. Let's not get there. Now, if Arkansas is blowing us out, pass me the paper bag, but make sure there's a bottle of Henny in it so I could take that out chug that thing, poke holes in it, and put it over my head. I don't know. I don't remember the last time I had Henny. Okay? YouTube or StreamYard, whatever, it's been giving me issues here. Says there's 246 of you here on a Football Tuesday. Thank you guys so much. Please hit the like button, subscribe, all that good stuff. Now, of course, I buried the lead here with Michael Van Buren. So there's discussions going on as far as how does LSU want to divvy out the snaps of this quarterback room, okay? So I'm going to be as blunt as I possibly can because this will backfire, and sometimes you say things that probably shouldn't be said aloud, but I'm going to do it here. If I am Michael Van Buren, I am seriously considering being selfish and not playing the final two out of these next three games to preserve my red shirt. And there's a few reasons why I would do that. You know, I go back to what I said about Garrett Nussmeier that final season, and I was very vocal about him playing the bowl game, burning that red shirt, and, you know, being the guy going into next season. And my position on that has evolved to a certain degree. Now, my opinion on this can drastically change. And I do feel this would be a very good question to ask not only Frank Wilson, but Brian Kelly. Did you have direct conversations with every player on the team regarding their red shirt situation? All right, because it is a very delicate issue. There are quite a few players on this team that have burned their red shirt or burned a year of eligibility at some point in their careers just by doing role player special team stuff. And it sucks. It really sucks because that extra year can be so valuable. All right, there's plenty of guys that have had that fifth year of eligibility, and they're able to cash in. If you're a Power 4 starter, you're making no less than $75,000, which is a good chunk of money. It's a good chunk of money, especially if you're a quarterback. Okay? So if you're in Michael Van Buren's shoes, if he says, look, I'm going to do what's right for me, and I don't know who the next coach is going to be. I don't know if he's going to want me to be the starter. If I do what's right for me and preserve that final season or an extra season in theory, then guess what? I got to do that. And if he decides to do that, I can't blame him. Because what Michael Van Buren would say is, look, if you guys wanted to play me while the quarterback was sucking it up, then play me earlier while we're still in playoff contention. Now, here's the thing. My opinion on this would change if LSU went to Michael Van Buren before the season and said, look, you are our top backup quarterback. We cannot deal with this four-game nonsense when it comes to redshirting or not redshirting. So if they told him before the season, hey, the likelihood of you not preserving your red shirt and burning this season of eligibility, you not having a red shirt this year, is highly unlikely. It's highly unlikely that we're going to be able to preserve that. And this happened a few years ago with Garrett Nussmeier, ironically, where, you know, we went into the season, Max Johnson was our guy, and our top backup was Garrett. So what happened? Well, Max was struggling, and Garrett did some good things, and we were trying to decide what we're going to do with Garrett's red shirt and all of that. And that conversation was very public. You can go back and listen to the Ed Orgeron conversations, and Doug Nussmeier at the time had a very good point. Hey, why are we playing Garrett in mop-up duty when if you really need him, play him in games that we actually do need him? And I hate to say that I told you so, but you can go back to earlier in the year when I was flamed for doing a bizarre stream where for the Southeastern game, I said that Colin Hurley should be the top backup. And it was, well, who cares? That's not the big question going into this game. I was like, it is. I would not have played Michael Van Buren versus Southeastern because of this. I probably wouldn't have played him versus A&M either. But we're here. Okay? We are here. Let's go. And I think most people like GSGT feels this way. I think Michael Van Buren is a gamer and wants to play now, but we'll see. I'll tell you this. Of course he wants to play now. Okay. Now, there is a friend of the show named Peter Burns. And Peter's been on the channel before. We'd love to have him back on. I know Peter is a fan of ours. And he tweeted this out earlier today. I've spoken to multiple players throughout college football regarding this. One at the D2 level. One at the P4 level. One that plays at LSU. And all of them have in common that they are playing their fourth year in 4 years. So what Peter tweeted out earlier today is a rule change that would rip apart the fabric of college sports. And it's gaining traction, and it would fix quite a bit of the issues regarding Michael Van Buren. We'll discuss that rule change coming up. PHL Nation, it's time to lock in and get serious really quickly with our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast and FortifiedGulf.com. This is my buddy, Ramey. He is one of many Fortified Gulf Coast inspection professionals that are doing something to help you not only save your home, but your memories.
The Fortified program got started about 13 years ago. We adopted it here in New Orleans about 2.5 years ago. It's a more advanced way of doing the roof. It adds an extra layer of protection, whereas even if a hurricane was to pull the shingles off this roof, water will still not get into the house.
So yes, your establishment is important, but what about the things you can't replace? That family scrapbook or that painting that's been handed down from Meemaw to Papaw and to you? It is important to protect that today with Fortified Roofing. And while this seems like a priceless asset, did you know it can actually save you on your homeowner's insurance up to 37% if you are in South Louisiana? Just call the number 504-444-7563. That's 504-444-7563 or visit fortifiedgulf.com. That's FortifiedGulf.com. Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of Laborde Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at Laborde Therapy worked hard to fix that back. Your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053. Call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, LaborTherapy.com, with locations in Carncrow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. LaborTherapy.com. LaborDe Therapy.com. Let's go. Okay. So let's pull up Peter Burns' tweet. The amount of coaches that have to address which players are asking to redshirt this late in the season is a mess. The four-game redshirt rule is becoming more of a disaster with NIL. Either it's 4 years or 5 years of eligibility. Remove doubt. So a fifth year of eligibility would help out LSU quite a bit. You would get A.J. Halsey back because you would offer him $1.5 million because he would be worth that much, a safety that damn good, because we wouldn't be that good if we didn't have A.J. Halsey. You would bring Pyburn back, who's good. Jack Pyburn's a good player. You would bring Berrion Brown back if he had a fifth year. Xavion would be back if he had a fifth year. So this current LSU team would actually, if they wanted to come back, no matter who the coach is, it would do LSU some wonders. I'm not in favor of the fifth-year thing because college sports is meant to be a four-year eligibility thing. All right? The four-game or less redshirt thing, cool rule. I'm fine with it, okay? But as much as it bothers me that we have players that quit, and that's what they do, that's what you're doing, you're quitting, quitting on the team to preserve their red shirt, it's always few and far between. You know more, you have no more than probably two or three players per team that actually do that. I'm not in favor of the fifth year of eligibility. I'm just not. Okay. Let's go to Cole. Would you skip two games for $1 million? That's basically it. Now, I see a few of you say, hey, well, Carter, if Michael Van Buren was good enough, he could play his 4 years and be ready to go to the NFL. Okay, cool. That's not how the world works, though, really, because he is a 5'11 quarterback who has decent speed and decent arm strength. All right, the guy that is the best case scenario for Michael Van Buren to become is a guy like Bryce Young, who I'm not sure if we ever see another NFL team take a quarterback under 6 foot. In college, you can win with a quarterback under 6 foot easily. There's plenty of good college quarterbacks under 6 foot. So, you know, it's not a knock on MVB. It's just college teams or NFL teams base their NFL evaluations quite a bit off traits. MVB is a very good college quarterback. Could he be an NFL first-round pick? Absolutely. But it's not likely. It's two games you would have to sit out for $1 million. And I think most, or a theoretical $1 million he could get with a fifth year of eligibility. I think most players on the team would understand it. Even though most players on the team, or the ones I've spoken to, they want Nuss. And I will also tell you that players wanted MVB to start versus Alabama. They just did. And, you know, at halftime, there's a lot of discussions for Garrett to be pulled. So they went with them in the third quarter to start. And, well, we saw what happened there. Now, final thing on MVB before we get back into the topic du jour, which is Brian Kelly. We have done the full Michael Van Buren film study, and for clarification, I did not skip a single snap, and I went deep into every single Michael Van Buren play. And after rewatching it even again today, his performance was okay. I would say there were two really, really, really high-level plays. The throw to Chris was amazing. And that was one of the better Chris Hilton catches I've ever seen from him. And then the throw to Berrion was unbelievable. But there were some completions with some rough ball location. There were some bad drops. Obviously, the Tredez drop was what it was. You know, I tweeted this out, just a little side topic here. I'm so sick of this modern college football college football fashion. All right, this is going to be the most boomer, gray hair, mid-30s rant. Because when I played back in high school, I had the arm sleeve. I mean, I had the whole thing, and I wasn't that good. Huh? I was a situational pass rusher and special teamer, okay? But I love fashion. I love all of it. As long as it does not affect your play. But I do think two things that are affecting play. One is big, the baggy undershirt. What happened to the tight Under Armour that people wore under their pads where I can't be pulled down from behind? It's been this way for a few years. I don't get it. And teams just let it happen and get yourself hurt. Okay. And then the jiggly mouthpiece. I highly recommend you go watch MVB film study. I do think the mouthpiece of Tre'Davious Green caused him to drop that ball. All right. Or it had an effect on the catch. Because if you watch the mouthpiece, okay. So normally when you have your mouthpiece in, it's in, right? It's not going to move around at all. The mouthpiece was, you know, dangling. And then when the ball was coming at his face, pause, mouthpiece was like right here when he was looking to bring it in. Makes no sense. Makes no sense. If you have a mouthpiece, put it in your mouth. Pause. That's going to get clipped. That's fine. I don't get it. Let's go to BZ 504. Not going to lie, as a YN. Now, BZ, can you tell us? Can you translate what I want? I'm just kidding. I hate the two mouthpiece thing. I don't know. I don't know. This comment is going into the Hall of Fame. It just is. It just is. It's got to go up there. It's got to go up there. But I truly do think it. And that's not a Tre'Davious Green knock. Every player does it. And the problem with it is it could be a tell, because there are instances where Tre'Davious has his mouthpiece in. I would love for someone to go do this, someone that has more time than me. I do this for a job, so I should just go do this myself. But it will take a while. Go look at the snaps where we are running the ball. Does Tre'Davious Green have his mouthpiece in? And then when we're passing the ball, does he have his mouthpiece in or out? Okay. Let's go to Rob. He says, my fashion thing is these damn short pants are killing me. I don't mind the short pants because it doesn't affect your play, right? I can't tackle you by your knee pad. Okay. Now, let's go to Legendary CEO. He wears it when he blocks. But going back to MVB, I went on a rant. Shouldn't go on a diatribe like that. But, you know, as far as the Garrett thing is concerned and Michael Van Buren, the MVB reps were a little bit rougher than we would like to admit. But at the same time, I do think his performance was better than Garrett. I do. Even though the numbers do not bear it out. Garrett was 18 for 21, and MVB was 5 for 12. I do think it was better. Now, we then get into, to me, what I wanted to say for the end. Not because it's the most pertinent. We'll get back to the Brian Kelly thing in a second. But I do feel this is relevant. All right. I cannot stress enough, when it comes to position coaches, you can make a case that Brad Davis is amongst the worst at LSU when it comes to how his players perform. So, in the PFF era, since 2014, as many of you know, I disagree with PFF grades quite a bit, but what I do think they get right is when a player is not really playing well, they get the bad correct. But I do think when a mid player plays well, they'll overrate them a little too high. But for the most part, you look at every piece of data they have on an LSU player, offense or defense, since 2014. LSU, players that have played 400 snaps or more, Brad Davis has three of the four lowest graded players, offense or defense, over the past decade. That isn't an opinion. All right. Now, the PFF grades themselves are opinions. They're a bunch of micro opinions on how they feel a certain player played on a play. And there is guessing in those opinions because they don't know how the play is taught, how it's coached, the looks, the checks, what Garrett told them. I mean, there's a thousand different things. I say this with every single film study. Every film review, every single play, you should never take my opinion on that play as law. It's just my educated guesses. I would never sit here and tell you otherwise. Other than when, you know, it's clear this shouldn't happen. But even then, there's questions with every single play. Every single one. But three of the four. And three of those four, of those three players, they play different positions. So last year was Paul Mbenga as a left guard, DJ Chester as a center, and Weston Davis as a right tackle. Two of those guys are full-time starters. So we had 925 snaps of bad center play last year from DJ Chester. And we have had the 400-plus snaps of Weston Davis at right tackle. It's bad. It's all one position group under one position coach. I like Brad Davis. Never talked to him in my life, though. And, you know, I hate it for him. This is a guy that came home to Baton Rouge and is living his dream, coaching the LSU Tigers. Got to be the head coach of the LSU Tigers for a game. And he is one of the best position coach recruiters ever at LSU, the way he has flipped around offensive line recruiting. But none of that means anything if the guys out there aren't getting the job done. So as much as we want to pile on Garrett Nussmeier, you have to include that into the equation. You do. All right. Which is why, you know, it's one of those things where as a content creator, you are rewarded with absolutely positively piling on a player. You are rewarded with that. I'm not going to do that with Garrett when it comes to the entire picture because he's been bad. He's been bad. But you have got to include that. Now, part of why some of these offensive tackles and offensive linemen haven't been playing as well, some of that could be Garrett. A lot of that is the system and the environment you're in. One thing that is very important that LSU drastically missed on when it comes to the portal is you have got to give on every single team some corn-fed tight ends. I need tight ends that play the position with no regard for human existence. All right? That's what I want at tight end. We need meat, thickness. Why do you think I always talk about thickness in the SEC? I want thick, meaty tight ends. If their thighs can't be mistaken for tree trunks, I don't want them. Carter, what about Tre'Davious Green? He's a receiver. All right? Everything about that Alabama game, about Tre'Davious Green, because I've taken heat for being critical of Tre'Davious in the past, everything about that Alabama game is why the Tre'Davious Green experiment has been rough in the Sloan offense. It took Sloan so damn long to learn how to properly use Tre'Davious Green, to use him as the animal, as a wide receiver that we know he is. He is truly a breathtakingly talented receiver. All right. But what happened was because Bauer Sharp isn't getting the job done as a blocker, Tre'Davious couldn't get comfortable in the game environment because we were asking him to block. He simply cannot do it. He cannot do it. So you have got to play Donovan Green more because he is your only hope at this point. Give Giovanni Peterson a chance. Guys that have true experience being full-time tight ends, the way the position we normally expect it to be played is played, okay? But, you know, to go along with this offensive tackle problem with Weston Davis, and Kerryus Kern had a tough night. I like Kerryus a lot. I've met Kerryus. Very nice kid. One thing that can help out bad offensive tackle play is really good tight end play. Well, our tight ends are not good blockers. In any stretch of the imagination, they are not good blockers. Whether it be false start penalties, we got those. Double teams, can't do it. In space or in man of the line of scrimmage. Split zone kickout blocks, can't do it. What about simple blocking assignments? Can't do that either. Can't do it. Some of it is willingness, which is why you need to have the tight ends that have no regard for human existence. Now, here's the thing. There's not many of those guys that are out there. There's just not. And Frank Wilson made a really damn strong point that flies in the face of all this analysis that I just gave you about the tight end position, is that these are the best defensive ends you're going up in, against in college football. It's right here in the SEC. Big Ten's got good ones as well. Arvell Reese, great players, probably going to be the number one pick. Reuben Bain in the ACC, great players. But in the SEC, these ends are so damn good. They are so damn good every single year. We just do not have the athletes to block them. All right, and if you want a simple definition as to why our season has been as bad as it's been, we have gotten our asses kicked throughout the Brian Kelly era when it comes to blocking edges. All right. Not so much, obviously, in the first 2 years of with Will and Jaden and Emery, but these last couple of seasons, it's been tough. It's been tough. Okay. I don't know, Bo. Brent, I don't know, Bo. Okay. No, don't pause me, Benny. I want my SEC players to have meat on their bones. If you're not thick, you have got to be special. Harlan Berry is a special talent. All right? If you're not Harlan Berry, guess what? I need thickness. Don't need lankiness. Meat on the bone. You know those thick ribs, that thing that Brian Kelly ate at the end of the Texas Bowl? I want my SEC players to be able to have three of those and mow them down with these and then be able to go play a game. Okay? Now, a few things as far as like the coaching search is concerned. Once again, big thanks to our friends at Fortified Gulf Coast, Zion Imaging, and our friends at Labor Therapy, labortherapy.com. Okay? So, you know, I'm not a huge fan of coaching search content. But I do want to address these sports betting odds when it comes to coaching hires. They're not accurate. They're not. So Bovada had Nick Saban as the favorite to be the LSU coach. Okay? Obviously, a lot of us would love to have Nick Saban back. Recruiting would get back up, funding, all that stuff. And whatever you'd have to pay Nick, you'd have to pay him. But do you really want Nick Saban back when the guy who is the athletic director now has said Nick doesn't want to get back into coaching? So what would have changed from what he said last week to now for Bovada to have him as a favorite? Unless, of course, Verge just outright lied to Matt Moscona in that interview. It very well could have. I don't think so, though. I don't think so. So I think you have to be careful with these sports betting odds when it comes to the next coach. You know, these sports betting odds are normally accurate when it comes to the Heisman Trophy and, you know, anything else. But when it comes to the head coaching rumors, I think they do it just for PR. I do. I don't really even think you can place wagers on him at all. All right. So there you go. Let's go to Carvis. Traidez actually is a solid blocker. Okay, send me the clips. That's not what I see. And that's okay. It's okay if he's not a great blocker because he makes up for it as a receiver, but that's not what I've seen. And obviously your definition of solid could be subjective. All right. Now, I do want to save this final rant here for the Brian Kelly folks out there that say, well, you know what, Carter? Brian Kelly, he has made so much money coaching football. He has ruined what has been two really good rosters. 2023 was a top five college football offense of this modern era. Ruined it. 2025, Shrine Bowl 1000. We're the only team in the top five when it comes to the Shrine Bowl 1000 that will not make the playoff. And we're not even close to being in playoff contention. So Brian Kelly wasted two out of four seasons. We've already given him $40-plus million to have coached this team. Why does his greedy ass want the full $54 million? Shouldn't he take a hometown discount to help out the next coach and just take a reduced buyout of the $30 million or whatever? And here's the thing, all right? That's not how rich people operate. It's just not how rich people operate. Rich people that are celebrities, which Brian Kelly is, that have made a lot of money in sports, they rarely turn down other opportunities to make even more money. Even when, if they were to miss out on that money, it would have no effect on their livelihoods. None at all. That's just not how any athlete has ever operated, outside of maybe a very select few. They want every last bit of guaranteed money that is owed to them in their bank accounts. It's just how the world works. Why do you think athletes and celebrities take very shady sponsorship deals from shady people? Why do they do it? It's to make more money. That's just how it works. Okay? So even, let's just say, Brian Kelly was to say, hey, I want the full $54 million. Yeah, it's greedy. Yeah, the right thing to do, since we gave you this life-changing sum of money, would be to give it back. Just not how it works. It's not how it works. You're not in his shoes. You're not part of his family. You're not. You think his family wants him to take a discount? Hell no. Hell no. It's just not how this world operates. Okay? Like, it is amazing. Like, when you really think about it, all right? Let's take Steph Curry, for instance. Let's use a global athlete who all of us know. Or LeBron James, if you will. LeBron does not need to do DraftKings commercials. He does not. He makes $54 million from the Lakers alone. And he makes $80 million in endorsements every year. The DraftKings thing is somewhat problematic because he is a current athlete. But he does it. Don't blame him. I don't blame him at all. He does it. So the $10 million, let's just say LSU would happily take a $10 million discount. Brian Kelly said, hey, just give me $40 and we'll end this thing. That extra $10 is something. Huh? Oh, man. Trust me. I personally, I'll be completely honest. I don't have that much money. I don't. Brian Kelly is multiple times made more in a day than I'm worth. Period. All of my assets together. But we gave him a hilariously bad contract. And, you know, the thing that disgusted me the most about the Brian Kelly contract is that he got a $500,000 bonus for going 6-6, being bowl eligible. That is what really pisses me off about Scott's contract. And I've always said that. Giving him all that guaranteed money up front and doing another Jimbo, you know, we mostly said, okay, cool, let's see what happens. But I don't think any one of us on, hey, yeah, 500K for going 6-6? Well, I could do that. Seriously, you could, whoever you are watching this right now, you could probably walk into LSU and take that team to 6-6 at least one season to get that bonus. As a head coach, yeah, I think one of you, whoever you are, yeah, Pegasus, it's the same thing with this. All right, trust me, I have actually been frustrated with Kawhi on the aspiration stuff. It's a little bit different, but it's practically the same thing that we're discussing. So, yeah. Let's go to Sourdough Man. Nobody has that much money except politicians and celebrities. There's more people that have way more money than the politicians and celebrities. You know what's funny? And this was a stat that I heard in an episode of, I think it was Freakonomics, that if you were to put together every last dollar made in sports, like every dollar you could in revenue in every single sport around the world, it wouldn't be as much revenue as the corporation Johnson & Johnson makes every year. Like that's how much money some people have. Trust me, if Elon Musk wanted me evaporated from this world, a Starlink goddess would grab me and poof, he's got that much money. And I'm telling you this as far as the I kind of want to get weird on a Tuesday. Why not? I'll be on with Blake tomorrow night. I know you guys like us arguing. If you want to see us argue, go to Sunday night's stream. But if you want what I would advise YouTube TV to do in the YouTube TV ESPN beefier, this is a golden opportunity for a guy by the name of Sergey Brin, who is the overseer of Google.com, Alphabet, whatever the name of the company is. I should know. They pay me my money every month. So I'm proud to be, I'm not an employee of YouTuber. I guess I would be a contractor, if you will. So I have 3 monetized YouTube channels, and I get a check from Sergey Brin every month. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. But if I were to give you advice, Mr. Brin, you could run for whichever political office right now if you, that's worth billions upon billions of dollars, if you go to ESPN and say, look here, mother effers, here's your money, put the sports back on my platform, you're going to have customers for life. What would it cost? What would it cost Brin? I don't know what ESPN's asking. Is it $500 million extra? I don't know. Whatever it is, it's a drop in the bucket to Brin. If he were to walk up and say, look, my platform's the best platform, ESPN, here's the money, put the games back on our streaming platform. Because one of the more shocking things that's happened during this YouTube TV ESPN dispute, by the way, I love ESPN. I do. I know a lot of people are defecating all over the network. Love ESPN. I love YouTube. I love it. Okay. But these two are at odds over money. And then it could come back to what YouTube TV would have to charge you. I don't have YouTube TV, by the way. You could be in a spot, though, where Sergey's like, hey, I'm going to pay it. Let's go to Sherry Berry. I had to drop YouTube TV because I couldn't watch any foot. Can't watch any Sherry. Can't watch any foot. What's going on with this? What kind of Rex Ryan stuff we have going on here, Sherry? Power Hour LSU sponsored by FeetPick.com. I'm kidding. Ended up going with Hulu Live. Oh man, that Bobby Bonilla contract. All right, let's take a few more here. Carter back on this fine Tuesday evening. There we go. 900K a month. How have I been? I've been great. Cliff says I would go 8-4 minimum. But yeah, Sarah, no, I understood what you were saying, though. As a whole, outside of the CEOs and the Elon Musk, Reggie Bullock and his $56 million net worth, he does own an island. That is a true thing. Okay. Let's see. I think we do have a new college football playoff. 25 out. Let's see what it says. Okay. Oh, you'll get a live reaction here. So this is what the playoff field would look like right now. All right, so this isn't the official rankings. Top four stays the same. Ohio State, Indiana, Alabama, A&M all getting byes. 7-10 matchup would be Ole Miss, Texas. That would be sexy. The 11-6 would be Texas Tech and Miami. That would be great. Georgia, USF, and Oregon, Notre Dame. That would all be awesome. Awesome matchups right there. And the first two out would be BYU and Oklahoma. So there you go. And here's your new college football playoff, top 25, right here. Ohio State, Indiana, A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Texas Tech. I think they have all that right. Ole Miss or Oregon, that's fine with me. Notre Dame at number 9, ahead of Texas. Should Texas be ahead of Notre Dame? Both of Texas's losses, one possession losses on the road. Interesting. I understand there's a strong push for Miami to be ahead of Notre Dame as well since they beat them. Oklahoma, BYU, Utah, Vanderbilt, Miami, Georgia Tech, USC, Michigan, Virginia, Louisville. And number 24, USF, gets into the field, the top 12 field, as the top group of five ranked team. So there you go. Let's go to King MJ. BK offered a lesser amount of $43 million, and LSU tried to counteroffer $30 million. Okay. Cool deal. All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. We'll be back on tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Central. We should have a very fun guest for you then. Let's link up at the Arkansas game this weekend. Why not? It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. All right. I thought we were going, but Hitstick drops a super chat here at the end. I know it's a bit off topic, but do you have any insight on why we aren't seeing more noise for Blake Baker to get the job, a la Marcus Freeman? So you're saying Blake Baker getting the head coaching job the same way Marcus Freeman got the head coaching job at Notre Dame. All right. So it is a little bit different because Brian Kelly was fired. You know, when Brian Kelly left Notre Dame, he was leaving a team that was winning and heading in the right direction, going to LSU. And he also left later in the process where Freeman was a rising star, if you will. So they decided to hire in-house. But it is still essentially the same thing. The players wouldn't like Blake Baker to be the head guy. I think Blake wouldn't mind being the head guy at all. It's just kind of strange because, you know, he would have, you know, why didn't he get the interim role over Frank in this spot? I don't know. It is different, though. Could I see Blake Baker eventually being the LSU head coach? Maybe. It is a little strange, though, that you've not seen more push with that. So, it's a good point. It's a good point, Hitstick. Tonight, all our super chatters tonight, we had two of them, Benny and Hitstick. Thank you guys so much. Tonight, we are doing Stakes. Let's go.